You got us. Great Tuesday. How is everyone? Hope everyone's doing well. It's Matt and Lars. Noah is at the controls. I don't know if you've seen this yet, Lars, but I'm going to lead with our weatherman. James Spann is okay. He's recovering nicely, but he had to have immediate surgery in his abdomen last night. He missed his Weather Brains appointment, had to go to Grandview immediately, and as he said in his tweet, his ex, whatever you call him these days, that he had to have immediate surgery on a bowel obstruction because he went into double over type pain. But there's a picture of him in his hospital bed there at Grandview, and then there's a picture of a beautiful sky with the little dots of clouds, wisps of clouds in the sky. So I don't know if you'd seen that yet or not. I just saw it about 45 minutes ago, but my prayers, our prayers, go out to James Spann, our dear weatherman. Lars, how are you today?
I'm good. It's my teaching day here in Tuscaloosa.
Teaching day.
Yay. And I actually just got off the phone with Ryan Spann, James' son. And James is doing really well. He's an absolute machine, as you know, Matt. We're both very close with James, and you know, he was having a lot of pain last night, and he still wanted to stick around at the station ABC 3340 and do the 10 o'clock news and weather. And finally, you know, Ryan called him after Ryan's brother had said, "Hey, you need to call Dad." And basically, James could barely speak. And Ryan's like, "You're not doing the news, Dad." And he went and got him and took him straight to Grandview, where James played a prominent role in getting that hospital built, frankly. And had surgery late last night. And, you know, James and I are co-founders of a multimedia company called Sky High Studios. And we were supposed to have a Zoom call at 5:30 this evening. And I just had assumed that we were going to cancel the Zoom call. But Ryan was telling me, "Hey, Dad, don't be surprised if we keep that Zoom call." I mean, come on, James. If you're listening, take a break. Take a break. Get well. You don't have to do a Zoom call from your hospital bed. But, and you know, in typical James Spann fashion, he was asking the nurses, "Hey, what can I do to help you? What can I do to help you?" You know, and here he is just in a tremendous amount of pain in his abdomen. But everything looks like it's moving in the right direction. And he'll hopefully be back on air very soon. And also, man, he may be on the Zoom call tonight. So for us at Sky High Studios, because we have some major decisions to make. And obviously, James is our leader. And but again, James, if you're listening, please don't rush anything. We can take a few days here. But yeah. but you know, Matt, you know James just as well as I do, and he is just tenacious. He is the hardest working man I've ever met in my life, and that is truly not an overstatement. The fact that he every single day he travels to speak at school, and you know he's still working just so hard at the weather, and he's written books, and you know now we have this this project with Sky High Studios, which is taking up a lot of our time, which you know you and I have discussed privately, Matt, and so I am impressed with James almost on a daily basis.
He's a good man on every single front, and here's to him getting better. I hope he's not listening. I hope he ate some lunch and taking a nap, but James gets about 3 hours of sleep a night, and that's enough for him. He's an amazing person, not just as a weather, you know, as a meteorologist, but just as a general person. And anyway, James knows we're thinking about him, and I will like an update via Twitter at about 6 o'clock tonight, whether or not he made his Zoom call. All right. In the world of sports, of course, Alabama will host the Mocs of UTC this weekend. New Mexico State goes to the Plain. But the main story continues to be coaches firing, who's hiring. And I don't know what you've heard over the past 24 hours, actually 22 hours since we last discussed it. But I just want to throw in a name from our state that I think will probably get a phone call, maybe on one or more of these. Rich Rodriguez at Jacksonville State University. Lars, is he a fit for Northwestern, Michigan State, Texas A&M, Boise State, or Mississippi State?
Well, I would love to see Rich Rod at Michigan State, given the fact that, you know, it didn't end well for him at Michigan. And to go to the arch rival, that is just something that would be delicious for Rich. And you know, we've talked about this. I'm friends with Rich. We've played golf a lot, and he is just quite the character, and he's done such a good job at Jacksonville State after you know, he had some issues at Arizona, some personal issues, and those have been resolved, and come to Alabama, coaching Jacksonville State, and doing a terrific job there. And yeah, I think his name will be discussed. You know, he's only 60 years old, and not only that, he's a young 60. When you're around him, he just has so much energy and fire, and man, his sense of humor. He's just, you know, he is just an enjoyable person to be around. He's someone you want to sort of hang out with, you know, and like have, if you're at a dinner party, you want to be sitting next to Rich Rod. The guy can tell story after story after story. And he's just, he's a lot of fun. His players at every stop have respected him, and I think have played hard for him. And, I think he'd be a great fit at Michigan State. How about you? What are your thoughts? I think we may have lost Matt, perhaps.
Matt, you're still on mute.
I don't know if he goes to Michigan State. I think for the very reasons you just gave us, that's a possibility. I don't see him going to Texas A&M. Northwestern. Mississippi State, maybe. Could he go there? That might work. So, by the way, I heard Lane Kiffin's quote on the firings of Jimbo Fisher, and more so Arnett, because he's in state, the Egg Bowl's coming up, all that. He was very, very disappointed, and made some really good points about letting a guy go after 10 games who came in late to the party and has not really even had a time to get his deck in order. And yet he's been fired already following the 51-10 loss to Texas A&M. Of all the firings that I've seen here, Lars, that to me is the most unjust. 10 games to right a ship to follow Mike Leach?
Yeah.
The more I think about it, the more aggravated I get, because, man, that is truly the definition of unfair. They didn't even give him an entire season.
Yeah.
They didn't let him get a full recruiting class in.
They really put him in he was in a tough spot following Mike Leach, and, you know,
what Mississippi State did, Lars? They let him come in an 11-0 game in the ninth and mop up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He was just sent there to mop up, and that's not fair. I guess maybe he was the only one available, but if he's the only one available, at least give him a couple of years, maybe. Like I said, and you can probably tell, I'm becoming more and more aggravated about his dismissal. And quite honestly, some of my aggravation stems from what Kiffin's points were made. mean, he laid it right out there. Of course, many are saying he wanted him to stay there because he knew he could beat him. But I know, you know, that's all, you know, internet and social media fodder. But that's a situation because you're looking for coaches at Northwestern, Michigan State, Texas A&M, Boise State, Mississippi State. And Lawrence, before we go to break, do you think there's another foot or two, another shoe or two to drop here?
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk about that on the other side. And the other thing I want to talk about is all of this money being paid out to coaches who have been fired since the 2022 season. It is staggering. Over $146 million, and that's half of that's Jimbo. And let's get into the other coaches who are still raking in a lot of money, including two coaches from Auburn and one from my hometown of Lincoln, Nebraska.
We'll continue with Big Noon Sports in a moment. Bottom of the hour, we've got Mike Rodak from Bama 24/7, so stay tuned.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A cloudy sky this afternoon. The most widespread rain stays south of here, the high 67. Cloudy and cooler tonight. Rain moving in, especially after midnight, the low 50. Tomorrow, cloudy and cool with occasional rain. The high in the upper 50s at 59. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 67 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
Welcome into the show. Portions are brought to you by Laura Lee. Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker, Advantage Realty Group. She'll be with us Friday as we broadcast live from Innisfree from noon until 2. Laura's actually took the time last night, watched a little Monday Night Football. Not sure. I'm glad I did. Man, that was some pretty bad football. But Denver is kind of starting to show, you know, spread their wings or get into their gallop. Maybe that's what I should say with the Broncos. But they ended up winning this thing 24-22. And afterwards, the Bills fired Ken Dorsey. Is that the guy who used to quarterback at Miami?
Yeah, won a national championship in Miami. Sure. And he was known as one of the up-and-coming coordinators in the league, but for whatever reason, it just has not worked out for Ken Dorsey. And you know, Josh Allen makes some absolutely ridiculous decisions. I don't understand some of the things that he does, and unfortunately, that caused Dorsey to lose his job. And now, guess who's elevated to be the interim OC? And that's Joe Brady, who really made a name for himself at LSU. And he was kind of the brains behind that Joe Burrow-led offense of, 2019? Is that it? When Burrow threw, 400 touchdowns, but also they had, think about this offense, they had Edwards-Helaire at running back, Chase at one wide receiver position, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson at another wide receiver position, and Joe Burrow at quarterback. I mean, what a stacked team. That has to go down as one of the best teams in college football history. But in Joe Brady was a key element in that, and I think in the development and growth of Burrow, and Brady could be a long-term offensive coordinator for Buffalo. But Josh Allen, he leads the NFL with 13 turnovers. He's thrown 11 interceptions, and one of the interceptions last night wasn't his fault. Hits the receiver in the hands.
Oh, yeah, hit him in the hands.
Yeah, but then the other one was just, he's got a really strong arm, but when you're trying to throw like a 15-yard out and you are standing on the right hash and you're going to the left sideline, That's a lot of ground to cover. And just a really ill-advised throw there. Still, the Bills had a chance to win it in the very last play of the game. Denver's kicker pushes a field goal attempt wide right. Looks like Bills win. Oh, no, there's a penalty flag. Guess what happened? Too many men on the field for the Bills. Give the kicker another chance, and he drills it through the uprights. And that one just has got to really sting if you are a Bills fan, because now they're 5-5, and they're facing an uphill battle to make the playoffs. And also, you know, the Bills offense, which we thought was going to be really high powered, hasn't scored more than 25 points since week 4. But the biggest issue is turnovers. And you're not going to win many games in the NFL if you lose a turnover battle, Matt.
No, you're not. And what has happened, in my view, in the last couple of years is Josh Allen has gone from one of the elite top 3 or 4 quarterbacks in the NFL to really mediocre. And mediocrity is my word of the day concerning the NFL. I think you got a huge game coming up, right? Chiefs and Eagles. Those are the two best teams in their respective conferences. But other than that, they're all like 4-5, 5-5, 5-4, 3-5. It's not a very pretty year for the National Football League unless you're a fan of Mahomes and Hurts. And that's where it is. And the reason that the Bills are in such of a mess is because of Josh Allen. He's just not playing very well. So we'll see which one of these teams can finally right their ships. But right now, and last night, I watched it. It's football. It was on. But it was tough to watch, and I kept thinking, these guys are professional football players with 12 men on the field?
Yeah.
Missing extra points?
Denver missed 2 extra points. Yeah, I mean, Denver is not, that's the thing. Denver is not a very good team. They're not.
Is it Sean Payton?
No, it's I think it's Russell Wilson. And Russell Wilson, he played okay last night. But you know what they did is they just they took care of the ball. And so when the team you're playing turns the ball over 4 times, you're going to have a pretty good chance to win the game.
Even if you're Denver.
Even if you're Denver, yeah. And, you know, I actually took Denver last night, getting 7.5 points. I was very, very pleased.
Well, you got the points and the win.
Yeah,
good
yeah.
For you.
The Bills have problems. The Bills have big problems. And, but, you know, look, the National Football League is designed so that everybody is basically 8-9 or 9-8 now that there's a 17-game schedule because of how the draft works, how free agency works, the salary cap. You know, that's the goal, is to have have a really big middle class, very small upper class, and a small lower class. And we're really seeing that this year. I think the Baltimore Ravens, they had a chance to put some distance between themselves and everybody else in the AFC North, and then they get beat by the Cleveland Browns on the last play of the game. Cincinnati got beat on the last play of the game. The Bills get beat on the last play of the game. There were a lot of games this last week that went to the last play of the game. And yeah, it's not all, you know, great football or anything, but I'm like you. If it's on, if the NFL's on, I'm going to watch it.
Even
for sure.
If it's a capital UGLY.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, hey, let's talk about buyouts here for a second, okay? All right, so we discussed this yesterday. Texas A&M is paying a record $76 million buyout to fire Jimbo Fisher. And since 2022, and this is according to data that ESPN acquired, and it's an ESPN story, up on ESPN.com, written by Paula Levine, that since 2022, about 146 million has been paid out by Power Five schools to head coaches who have been fired, right? And Jimbo Fisher accounts for more than half of that, which is pretty crazy. So 76 million goes to Jimbo, as we discussed yesterday. What is 19.1 million goes to him within 60 days. And then within 90 days, he gets 7.1 annually through 2031. That's a pretty good deal. And you mentioned too, and the thing is, he can double dip, right? If he wants to coach next year, this is like Bobby Bonilla stuff, right? And you know what I'm talking about, Matt. What is Bobby?
Yeah, he's still getting paid by
the Mets.
$1 million a year by the Mets.
Yeah. I forget what there is a Bobby Bonilla day that, when the contract is due. I think it runs through 2034 or something. But yeah. So, okay. So, among the coaches who have been fired since 2022 who are getting these buyouts, the previous record before Jimbo was Auburn's Gus Malzahn. He got 21.7 million. And then who is third on the list? Auburn, Brian Harsin. He gets 15.5 million. Fourth, Nebraska's Scott Frost. 15 million. Scott is out of football.
How long is that one going?
I don't know I don't know the details of it, but Scott moved to Phoenix and literally bought the most expensive house in the Scottsdale area. So he's doing okay for himself.
Scott's not one to really shy away from the ego, is he?
No, I'm surprised. I'm surprised he hasn't sued me, frankly. But it's because he's a public figure, and he knows he wouldn't win. But and this all goes back to the Showtime documentary that we did on Lawrence Phillips. But that's a whole nother story. Okay, so Harsin was third, Frost was fourth. Jeff Collins fired at Georgia Tech in September 2022. His buyout was 11.4 million. Paul Christ fired in October 22. His buyout was 11. Carl Durrell, do you even know where he coached?
No.
I wouldn't have either unless I had in front of me. Colorado fired in October 22, 8.7 million. Herm Edwards fired from Arizona State, 4.4 million. And Zach Arnett fired on Monday from Mississippi State. He gets 4 million. You know what? For Zach Arnett, good for him. Like, he deserves that 4 million.
Yeah, but that won't enable him to go buy the biggest house in Tucson.
No, but I think he wants to get back in coaching.
But, he's a relatively young guy. But, I hope he gets back in, and I hope he gets a chance to take on Mississippi State. Hey, you hear the music. We're going to break. That means we will have Mike Rodak from Bama 24/7 on the show in just a matter of minutes. This is Big Noon Sports.
Laura Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
Sports Talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
Back on Big Noon Sports. Matt Coulter along with Lars Anderson. Noah is our producer today as we continue to talk all things college football, a lot of NFL. Who knows? Maybe we'll talk about Shohei Ohtani, who's going to the Braves, I'm convinced. No, I'm not, but that was social media fodder last night. Mike Rodak joins us on Big Noon Sports, brought to you by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker. Mike, how are you today?
Doing well. How are you?
Really good. Alabama just continues to improve. Just glance back over your right shoulder or left and give us your thoughts on what happened Saturday afternoon in Lexington, Kentucky.
Yeah, sort of a game that I think we talked about last week was a trap game. And so it was, I guess, validating to hear Nick Saban use that term as well after the game, that he considered it a trap game and, you know, in fact, put out, you know, mouse traps around the facility last week as sort of a visual reminder for players that, you know, this is a trap game and, you know, don't take the cheese, which, you know, is kind of like the rat poison. That's another term that came up after this game. And that was kind of the feeling, that it was an early start. It was a pretty cold morning. You know, you're going on the road to a smaller stadium. There was zero energy outside that stadium walking into it. I mean, it's basketball season in Lexington now, and you're coming off a pretty emotional win over LSU. So I think the elements were in play. We're certainly there for a letdown, a trap game, relaxation. And well, what do? They come out 21-0. It was pretty clear from the get-go that they are ready to play. And, you know, Kentucky was probably the team that was sleepwalking, if anything. And, you know, Kentucky played a little bit better as the game went on, you know, got it to within 14, and then Alabama kind of closed the door on them with another touchdown. So that's what they needed to do. I think it was, you know, when you're talking about trying to improve your margin of victory and just trying to do everything you can to get your resume where it needs to be, that's exactly what they did.
What's your assessment of, one, just the play of Jalen Milroe on Saturday, and also just his continued evolution at the quarterback position?
Yeah, it you know, you had that early play where he gets hurt, and we're all thinking, all right, like this is exactly what Nick Saban was kind of warning against or talking about last week when he got asked on his radio show about Milroe being physical and running and trying to punish opponents. And Saban said, yeah, all that's great that you're competitive, but ultimately need to be smart. And that was a run, you know, in the first drive there where he was just trying to do a little something extra and got hit in the thigh with the helmet. And then, you know, we all see him hobbling around and goes to the ground and goes to the sideline. We're thinking, man, like, you know, is this going to be a very unexpected Ty Simpson game? And that lasted one play before Milroe came back in. So credit to him to fight through that. And, you know, he was certainly dealing with it. There was an ice pack on his thigh between drives and was on the bike. So for him to put up the six touchdowns with that was pretty impressive. And, you know, I think the evolution for him is getting better at picking his spots on when to run, when to throw it away, when to give up on a play, when to check down. You know, it's not perfect. He threw an interception. There was a few other plays where you're like, he had an open receiver and he missed them. But overall, the product has been better from him. And, you know, I don't think he's winning the Heisman. But he's, you know, he's in the top 10 safely, I would say, for the Heisman race. And for, you know, from where he came from 2 months ago, that's pretty good for him.
That's just amazing, really, when you consider what things were like at Alabama following the South Florida game. And no one, of course, all eyes are on the quarterback. No one player slash position has grown faster and more this year at Alabama. But Terrion Arnold, in my opinion, has grown into – is he a first rounder yet? Let me just jump out there with that, Mike.
He could be. You know, Dane Brugler, who works for The Athletic and does their NFL draft coverage and certainly very respected every year and well-connected with scouts. He had him in his top 30 when he did that, I think it was a week ago. So, you know, you see that and ESPN's draft experts now are having Tarion in the top four or five among corners, which, you know, that could very well get you, if not, you know, the first half of the second round, and maybe sneak you into the back half of the first round. So it's a draft decision that I think a month ago, if you'd have asked me, you know, where does he stand on it, I would say there's a chance he would come out, but it would probably be better for him to come back and play himself into a higher standing. Now, with what he's done and, you know, that kind of jumping or, you know, him jumping that route and getting the interception in Kentucky, I think got a lot of attention from NFL people. You know, that and his length too, I think his length is ideal for the position and what they look for. Would not be shocked to see him go late in the first, early in the second, which, you know, means I think he comes out. At this point, I'm leaning towards being surprised that, you know, if he would stay in school. So that's where it's headed. And obviously you're losing Kool-Aid as well, who could be a top 10 pick. So you're losing two of your top corners. And then, you know, overall in this defense, it's potential for there to be seven or eight draft picks just on defense. That's pretty incredible.
Mike, everyone has been talking about just how well Alabama played and looked on Saturday, and that that this team appears to be, you know, obviously trending in the right direction. But it's my job to be a wet blanket here. What still concerns you about this Alabama team?
No, I think it's fair. It's sometimes I think there's overreactions in both directions, and this is a team that everybody was, you know, kind of paused history at the halftime of the Tennessee game. And what was everybody thinking then? And then you have the second half against Tennessee, you have the LSU game, you have the Kentucky game, and that has transformed how people think about this team. But, you know, you're doing it against, again, it was just kind of a listless Kentucky team, kind of a Kentucky team that, is very limited in the passing game. You know, Devin Leary has not been the answer for them at quarterback. And, you know, their strength was in the running game with Ray Davis, and Alabama's strength this season has been stopping the run. So that was, you know, a big win for Alabama to stop the run. And there's nothing else Kentucky was really doing besides that. So, you know, there's Kentucky is what they are. LSU's defense was what it was. Tennessee, as we just saw against Missouri, is, you know, not a great team this year. A good team, not a great team. So, what I'm getting at is, you know, it's good. Like what they've done, I think they're taking care of business instead of tripping over themselves like they did against South Florida, like they did in the second half against Arkansas, like they did against Ole Miss in the first half. But, you know, does it mean that they're going to beat Georgia? Does it mean they're a better team than Georgia? I don't know that yet. And I would say no right now. So, it's certainly would make me more optimistic, but I don't think it leaves anything certain. And, you know, there's still, you know, the defense has been very good. I think there's been moments where they haven't. The offense has been very good lately, but we all know that there's certainly things that can happen there where you're scratching your head and there's bad snaps or penalties or whatever. So all those things could still crop up, you know, special teams. We saw the error with Kool-Aid. So, you can't have that if you're playing Georgia. If you get past Georgia in the playoffs, you can't have that against the good teams you'll see there. So, you know, appreciate this team for what it is, but I still think if they make it to the national championship, they're probably going a little bit further than what I would expect at this point even.
And perhaps, as many have suggested on this program, might be in progress of the best job Nick Saban's ever done at Alabama, and that's certainly saying a lot. Mike, I can't remember what the schedule was at Alabama on Tuesdays. Do you have players at the top of the hour?
Yeah, Will Reichard, Roy Dell Williams, and Malachi Moore.
Can you just quickly hold through the break? We'll ask you a couple more questions and let you skedaddle, or you need to go now?
No, all good to stay.
Okay, all right. Mike Rodak from Bama 24/7 is our guest right here on Big Noon Sports. More, let's get into the coaching dismissals and payouts and all that when we return on Big Noon Sports.
Okay. Catch Christian and Corey Miller every weekday here on Tide 100.9.
Come up tomorrow on the Miller's Edge. It's a Talking Tuesday. I'm Corey Miller, the pastor, painted alongside Christian Miller, two-time national champion. We'll break down Alabama's win over Kentucky. We'll look at Chattanooga. And, yes, we'll start eyeing that SEC championship game. The Georgia Bulldogs, we're ready to rock and roll. That's coming up on the Miller's Edge.
Tune in 11 to noon to hear Christian and Corey Miller break down everything from college to the pros on Tide 100.9, the home of Alabama sports.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
When you switch. Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A cloudy sky this afternoon. The most widespread rain stays south of here, the high 67. Cloudy and cooler tonight. Rain moving in, especially after midnight, the low 50. Tomorrow, cloudy and cool with occasional rain. The high in the upper 50s at 59. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 67 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
It is indeed, and our guest from Bama 24/7 is Mike Rodak. Mike, we all know the who, the when, the where, and even the why when it comes to what happened with Jimbo Fisher on Sunday morning at 9 o'clock at College Station. There's the answer to those. I think we know why. They said he's stuck in neutral. I want to know who's next.
It's funny how, you know, some of the names you see get thrown out there. Just during the break, I was checking Twitter, and Pro Football Talk was throwing out the possibility of Dan Campbell leaving the Detroit Lions to go back to Texas A&M where he played.
No.
Which I don't think he would ever do. Right. No. I don't think any NFL head coach is leaving an NFL job for a college job and all of the issues that come along with NIL, et cetera. You know, just like the Mike Tomlin to USC talk last year, 2 years ago. But, you know, realistically, is it a job that Lane Kiffin, I think, would want? Yes, I think as we saw with the Georgia game, you know, Lane, he's probably reached his ceiling at Ole Miss. Like, I don't know if you're beating Alabama. I don't know if you're beating Georgia with what you're able to do at Ole Miss. And I think Lane, you know, to his credit, has built that program into something pretty good, but they're not great. And, you know, can he take what he knows as a coach and apply it to A&M and their resources? I think so. Obviously, there's pitfalls there in terms of just how well does Lane's personality match up with Texas A&M's culture. That would be an interesting fit. I know Deion Sanders is another name. I don't really foresee him leaving Colorado and, you know, his sons there. I don't think it's the time yet for him, you know, to make the next move. And I don't think he's done enough to make the next move to the SEC. But, you know, I think the safest bet, and it might not be the splashiest name, is for A&M to go and bring back Mike Elko, who's been really solid at Duke, has a history at that school, knows the culture. You know, I think he's young enough still where I think, you know, you could have some runway to build that program over time. I don't think it's a retread hire by any means. It might not be the youngest and flashiest name out there, but you know, I think the best hire for him. But I think Ross Bjork might be trying to swing a little bit bigger than that. And, you know, with the money that they have, they can hire pretty much anybody, but it's not a job that I think anybody would accept either.
I'm with you. I think it's Elko. Quick NFL question. You covered the Buffalo Bills for a few years for ESPN, and I believe your last year there in Buffalo was Josh Allen's rookie year. This season, Josh Allen leads the NFL in turnovers with 13, including 11 interceptions. Simple question, what is wrong with Josh Allen?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, as you saw today, you know, Bills just fired their offensive coordinator, Ken Dorsey, after last night's game against Denver. When it was a lot of turnover issues, there was an interception off a what should have been a catch. There was a fumble and after a catch, you know, there was issues on defense. There was issues on special teams for the Bills. They had 12 men on the field at the end when the Broncos missed the field goal. And then after the penalty, they hit the field goal to win it. So it's, you know, it's kind of a weird scapegoat, but it's also, there's been issues with that offense this year. And what we saw a couple of years ago from the Bills with Josh Allen, just, you know, it seemed like every single drive they would score a touchdown, especially right after they got Stephon Diggs. And, you know, there was a period there where they were close to unstoppable. It's changed. I mean, our offensive line's gotten worse. Diggs has gotten a little bit older and has not been quite as consistent. They don't have a running game. And Allen has always kind of been what he is, which, you know, he's always been turnover prone. I think there's been periods where he's cleaned it up. But he's always kind of playing that reckless, loose style where, you know, you're just, weird things happen sometimes. There was a play last night where he went to hand the ball off and the ball just fell out of his hand before he even got to the running back. There's passes where you're just scratching your head saying, why is he throwing that? Because he, you know, he tries to do too much. And that's kind of what he's been doing since he was at Wyoming. And I think in his mind, it's kind of gotten him to where he's at. And there's some great plays that he makes, especially with his legs, but he just kind of is what he is. And as long as he's there, you know, I think they're going to be a really good team, or they could be a really good team. I don't know if they're ever going to fully put it all together just because of how erratic he can be. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. You know, they're paying him a lot of money. There's no way they can get rid of him. There's no way they would get rid of him, but it's like, what do you do around him? Especially with the salary cap, you're paying him so much that it's hard to build a team around him. That was one of the things early on in his career. He was a lot cheaper, you know, on his rookie contract, and that was supposed to be their window that they could afford all the other players. Well, now that they're paying him big money and paying Diggs big money, they just don't have enough cash to go around for everybody else.
All right, back to the college ranks. Very good head coach in our state, maybe a little overlooked even in our state, if not nationally, is Rich Rodriguez at Jacksonville State. Does he fit anybody's puzzle when it comes to the coaching searches?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question because I think, you know, they were pretty competitive against South Carolina a week or two ago. And obviously a name who's been, you know, in some big jobs. I wouldn't be surprised to see him move up again. I haven't specifically seen his name connected to anything. I think, you know, and there's jobs starting to open up now. Obviously Mississippi State and A&M, San Diego State's open now with Brady Hoke retiring. And obviously there's going to be a lot more in another week or so. And it seems like, you know, teams are doing this earlier too, because they really want to get a jump on the portal. Because if you're, you know, that last weekend of the season and right after Thanksgiving, if you're firing a coach and then the portal opens the next day and you can't get players because you don't have a coach, you know, that's putting you behind the eight ball. So the quicker you can move and get a new coach in place, the faster you can start building through the portal, taking advantage of that. So, I haven't heard anything specific with Rich Rod, but you're right. He's overlooked a little bit in this state because, you know, there's obviously two giants. And then there's Trent Dilfer at UAB, which is another big name. And Rich Roggs is kind of humming along and doing pretty well there.
Mike, before we let you go, and I know you need to run, your thoughts on the job that Hugh Freeze is doing at Auburn?
Yeah, I've sort of watched from afar. And it's, you know, he's very limited with his personnel. And in fact, I was listening to an interview he did on, you know, Sirius Radio, and I was driving back from Lexington on Sunday. And, you know, he's doing what he can with this team this year. I don't think he has all the pieces in place, but what they did against Arkansas was pretty impressive. And, you know, Hugh Freeze is one of only a few coaches out there that's beaten Nick Saban twice. So definitely not a game for Alabama to overlook, especially when it's in Jordan-Hare.
Thank you, Mike.
Get to your players.
Yep.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you so much.
And you can read Mike on Bama 24/7. Thanks, Mike. Talk to you again.
Thank you.
All right. Coming up next hour, I've just been informed by one Lars Anderson that one only Tim Brando. Man, I can't wait to hear what he has to say about all these buyouts.
Oh, it's going to be great. Yeah.
Zach,
he's going to be on fire.
If you think I got lit up about Zach Arnett, what do you think Timmy's going to do?
Also, I've been texting with Rich Rodriguez. Hopefully, we can get him on tomorrow.
Oh, well, that'll be a scream. We'll just give him the microphone and just sit down and
let him go.
15 minutes. Let him go. All right. We're approaching the top of the hour. That means halftime on Big Noon Sports.
Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
WTBC Tuscaloosa and W265 CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square Media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app. From the Fox Sports Studios in Los Angeles, here's Monsi Bolaños.
Following their loss on Monday night to the Denver Broncos, the Buffalo Bills announced that they have fired offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey. Buffalo committed four turnovers in the loss, including three by star quarterback Josh Allen, who leads the NFL with 13 turnovers and 11 interceptions. Bills' new interim offensive coordinator will be quarterbacks coach Joe Brady. The NFL has suspended Texans linebacker Denzel Perryman for three games for repeated violations of playing rules intended to protect the health and safety of players. And in the NBA, according to the Arizona Republic, Devin Booker is expected to return Wednesday against the Timberwolves after missing the last five games with a right calf strain. Bradley Beal is also expected to play after tweaking his back on Sunday against OKC, meaning the Suns' big three are set to make their regular season debut tomorrow.
From T-Town to the plane. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Hey, the gang is here. Appreciate all of you tuning us in. In Tuscaloosa, you listen to Tide 100.9 and WTBC 1230. We have affiliates in East Alabama and the Gadsden-Anniston area as well. We appreciate you folks dialing us in this afternoon as we bring you Big Noon Sports. Wanted to just say, as we did at the very top of the show, that our thoughts and prayers are out with the one and all, the weatherman. I mean, he is just, I mean, he's followed by millions and millions on social media and beloved in this state. James Spann had to have some emergency-type surgery last night. He went to Grandview, which, oddly enough, I think he's on the – he may be the chairman of the board, but I know he's on the board of the directors and has been instrumental in the development of that hospital, so where else would he go? But he is recovering nicely. If you follow him on X, then you know that he's already showing pictures of him in the sky, and they're probably going to have to put restraints on him just to keep him from doing the weather and weather brains and his – many, many appearances at schools around the state. But anyway, just tip of the old weather brains cap to James Spann, Lark.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're certainly thinking of James. And boy, he, as we mentioned first hour, he's an absolute machine. And I wouldn't be surprised if he is on this 5:30 Zoom call that we were supposed to have tonight for the business that we have started together called Sky High Studios. Matt, I wanted to share just a personal story from this weekend, and I didn't find out about this until yesterday afternoon. you know, I'm a part of a group of people who are Bengals fans, and we gather at the Buffalo Wild Wings on Highway 280 in Birmingham every Sunday to watch the Cincinnati Bengals. And our group has been growing, and we really have an array of different people, different ages, different backgrounds. It was pointed out to me just yesterday that apparently I'm the oldest one in the group, which I certainly don't act like the oldest one, I hope. But
no, I can vouch for that. I've been there, done that.
Yeah, you've been. Yes.
When I've attended, the age has gone up too. So is what you're saying, you need me to come more often.
Yeah. But you know, there's probably about, it varies, maybe like 12 of us, maybe up to 20, 22. It's people from really all around the state come, as far as Smith Lake, and I think as young as probably 22 up to my age, one of the people in our group, she's pregnant, and a bunch of people brought baby gifts for her.
That's cool.
Carly, she's 34 weeks, I think, and she's doing great. So we've just really become close, and it's been really cool for me because, you know, for so many years, 25, I was either covering an event on Sunday or I was traveling home from an event on Sunday. And so during the fall, and so I never got to be just a fan. And I'm just so thoroughly enjoying the camaraderie of our group. And again, none of us knew each other until we just met randomly at Buffalo Wild Wings, and then other people talk, and it grows and grows and grows. Anyway, we all kind of have our same seats that we sit at. And the person who would sit next to me, he actually wasn't a part of our group, but he came every week, and his name was Mike, and he was a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And he always wore, you know, his Steelers jersey. And over the last few years, I've gotten to be really close with Mike. And, you know, he knew sort of my background. And I believe at one point he bought a couple of my books and brought them in. And, of course, I happily signed them for him and all that. But you know, we were friends. And the fact that he supported the Steelers, and we were all Bengals, but yet, you know, he was like a part of our group. And man, found out yesterday, Mike was 44 years old, and he died of a brain aneurysm. And I got to tell you, Matt, this one hit me pretty hard. And it's just it's really sad. Two, it makes you realize that you never know when your time is up. But three, I'm grateful that I got to know Mike, and that we got to spend all this time together on these Sundays over the last 3, 4, 5 years. And you know, I always try to talk about what makes sports special, because it's something I've constantly written about, and it's something I think about. In the fact that, yes, we got this great Bengals group, but also just the fact that we would have someone like Mike, who, again, really loved a different team, but he was almost, you know, a part of our group. He really was a part of our group, I should say. And we got so many pictures of us over the years, and you know, just my heart goes out to his family. And you know, I wanted to bring that up, and I wanted to ask you, Matt, have you ever been a part of, you know, just like a fan group, right? Whether or not it's sitting with fans at a game, You know, if you have season tickets, but I know you're like me where we usually are working games, right? And we have been over the years, but anything similar or maybe even, being on us on a, you know, on like a beer league softball team or, you know, just anything where sports brought you together with someone that you normally wouldn't have interacted with.
I was a part of a softball team for about 30 years. Greatest group of guys I've ever been around in my life. We all love sports. We all love beer. We all love the American flag. You know, we played in as one in spirit. And quite honestly, when we started all getting older, we finally stopped playing because our pitcher, our first baseman, our catcher, you know, guys were passing away. So we stopped playing. So I think that would be the closest situation that I have had personally. And it's tough when one of that team, literally, figuratively, every definition imaginable, it's difficult when one goes because it like takes a little bit of the heart of everybody that's on that team or in front of that TV set. So I hope you guys put a Pittsburgh Steelers helmet or jersey on that chair and maybe honor him the rest of the season.
That's a great idea.
Maybe even pull for the Steelers if it doesn't influence what's happening with the Bengals. Because I know it's a huge rivalry.
Now, I'm tempted to go try to find a Steelers jersey and wear it the next couple of weeks for Mike.
Yeah, that would be a very, very cool thing. And I didn't know I might have met Mike last time.
Oh, I'm sure you did. I'm sure you met him a couple times. He always had a big smile on his face. He was by himself, and you know, he again just sat right next to me because our chairs. And so it's weird how you know you always go back to your same chair
but y'all don't sit all that often.
No, we don't. We don't. We're totally obnoxious, and I'm sure the people at Buffalo Wild Wings absolutely hate us. But
I bet you take care of the people.
Oh no, we take care of the servers. It might be the other patrons because it gets a little crazy, especially night games. Bengals played on Monday night. 2 weeks ago, and now they're playing on Thursday night, so it can get a little ugly. But hey, everyone is invited. Buffalo Wild Wings, 280 Birmingham.
Be careful what you ask for here, Lars.
Come and honor Mike. And hey, we got to get to Tim Brando, Matt.
Let's do Tim Brando from Fox Sports is scheduled up next. He is on deck as you listen to Big Noon Sports. And brought to you in part by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker, Advantage Realty Group. Back in just a flash.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
From our Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A cloudy sky this afternoon. The most widespread rain stays south of here, the high 67. Cloudy and cooler tonight. Rain moving in, especially after midnight, the low 50. Tomorrow, cloudy and cool with occasional rain. The high in the upper 50s at 59. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 69 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
More Big Noon Sports coming up.
Indeed it is. Tammy B will be with us from Fox Sports in just a moment. run a couple of things by you as we saw a little bit below the fold, but not maybe in Texas. But Arch Manning is going to go into the transfer portal. That's what some of these folks around the Austin area are throwing out there. Is that going to happen, Lars?
Well, let's ask Tim Brando. Timmy B, how you doing? Yeah, what are you hearing about Arch Manning?
I haven't heard a word. This was news to me.
It was some social media blog, Tim. You know, who can you take seriously other than you these days?
Who knows? I spoke with the old redhead, and I spoke with his father, Coop, at Cooper at the Houston, Texas game that we did about a little over a month ago. And that, of course, was the game where, yours got dinged in that game. And obviously it had some impact on him, no question about that. He had to leave the game. And, they had a 21-0 lead. And at one point, I think one of the reasons Cooper Manning was there was he felt like Arch was going to get a little playing time if they got a comfortable lead. But that comfortable lead was taken away pretty quickly. It was 21-14, just like that. And Houston almost beat them, actually, that day. And and they've had a few close calls since then. But yours is back, and we'll see what transpires. No, I know nothing about what's the report? Just tell me what the hearsay is.
I haven't seen it. Matt was reporting on that. But hey, Tim, okay. let's start with Jimbo Fisher here. Your thoughts on his firing, the timing of it, and where does Texas A&M go from here?
Well, the timing of it is typical with the way college football is handled these days now. It's not just about the recruiting dates, but also the NIL dates that come into play, and to secure that, and make sure everybody's going to be in tow and not leaving, because they do have a wonderful roster filled with a lot of talented guys, and I'm sure they want to hold on to as many of them as possible. That's why they chose the interim coach to be who it was. My understanding is Elijah is their top recruiter, so that's why he's been given the nod to be the interim from this point forward. As it relates to where they're going to go, Lars, your guess is as good as mine. I suspect that if there is a big name that's available, that somebody that they could get, they're going to go after that big name, because those oil barons love to do that. This notion that they may have to chill out on the amount of money they spend because of the amount of money it's going to cost to keep Jimbo from coaching, I don't buy that at all. Those guys, they love to throw around their cash and to prove how much money they've got. So if they offer somebody else $10 million a year, I wouldn't be shocked at all. So the guys that they have to go out and get, whoever the so-called hot names are that are coaching that are a lot younger, I think would probably be led by Dan Lanning. You've seen what Dan Lanning had to say. And, I retweeted it because I was just with him this past weekend before the USC-Oregon game. He's not going to leave there. Not now. Not at this stage. Not with everything that they're on the precipice of accomplishing. And with the recruits that he's got coming in, and with the NIL infrastructure, courtesy of the Swish and Swoosh and Phil Knight, he's not going to leave there. Not at this stage of his life with young kids. I don't see that. I think he's genuine in what he says, although, coaches at this time are always going to defy those types of rumors and get rid of them as quickly as possible. I get that fans are accustomed to that. But in this era of NIL and the changing complexion of the game and the way you put teams together, I think it's more believable now when a coach says, no, I'm not going to go there. I think it's much more believable now than it might have been a few years ago. Urban Meyer has been thrown out there, and of those big names, I will tell you that I don't disagree that he could be a possibility. I'm not close to Urban, but I'm friendly with Urban. I do think that there's a lot of complexity with him. And obviously there are years of championships and some years of baggage that come with him. But I don't know that the so-called negatives would outweigh the positives as far as A&M is concerned, at least based on the way they've gone through this before. You know, the way A&M has handled it. I mean, with Jimbo, they were just after the biggest name that had a national championship on his resume, and they really didn't care what had happened at Florida State in the years preceding his exit. They cared about the fact that he had gotten a national title and that he had had a tremendous record and a pedigree of offensive football that had separated him in terms of building offenses. And listen, it's been a while since Jimbo has had tremendous success. 10 years, that's a long time. But he's also developed a lot of quarterbacks. Some have said now that his approach is outdated. That may well be true. But a lot of guys can resurrect themselves too at different stages. And that's what they were planning on when they brought him in 2017. They thought that with his name, they could attract the best possible players. But what they didn't know, obviously, was that the game was changing and that, you know, that Jimbo had failed to evolve in some measure. You don't have the kind of years he's had the last couple of years without failing to evolve, either as a X's and O's guy or from the standpoint of getting today's player to improve and develop under your tutelage. A&M's got the talent, but they have not developed that talent. True. And that is startling, you know, to a lot of people. And I think that was the case for Ross Bjork, and the reason why he detailed it the way he did when he made that decision and had that press conference that we all witnessed.
I don't think it surprised a whole lot of people that even, you know, follow college football on a medium level that Jimbo got axed, but the deal with Zach Arnett, the more I read about it, the more I think about it, the more I read Lane Kiffin's quote, pretty much scolding Mississippi State for allowing the guy 10 games. He did get a $4 million buyout, but my long way of asking you the question, that one surprised me and seemed unfair. Am I off base?
No, I don't think you are. But in today's world, in this environment, I think that this is why you're going to see these kinds of moves made. Because if you look listless offensively, and let's face it, okay, he had one of the best quarterbacks returning to his team. And that offense was awful and looked nothing like what it had before. And obviously, Mike Leach was a transformational coach. I mean, to compare him to what the late Mike Leach was all about would be very unfair, no doubt about it. But, you know, the fact that they did not have an offense that was built around the talents of a returning veteran quarterback was shocking. And I think that that's one of the reasons why they felt the need to do what they did. And a little bit like A&M, I think they probably felt similarly in Starkville that, well, if we keep this guy for another year and we don't really improve, and what are the chances of that kind of improvement when you look around what's happening, not just with the existing teams that you have to play, but with Oklahoma and Texas coming in. I mean, the circumstances for Mississippi State have always been difficult from a recruiting standpoint. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But to add those two teams, from the western side, really, even though we're getting away from the east and the west, but that those teams are going to be infiltrating the state of Mississippi to get talent, just like they have Louisiana, Texas, Florida, and beyond. So I think these kinds of reactions, Matt, that we deem unfair are just part of it now. Okay, there's no such thing as fair anymore in college football, and specifically when it comes to coaching. When we can give you a $4 million buyout for a coach like that that was a coordinator not that long ago, you know, he'll bounce back. Whether he gets a head coaching job again, who knows? But the lovely golden parachute on your way out the door in Starkville, there's no question about that.
Tim, you've spent a lot of time with the Oregon Ducks this season. You were on the call last week, Oregon-USC. Two questions. One, can you make an argument that Oregon is playing the best football in the country right now? And two, do you think Bo Nix is the best player in the country right now?
I'd say yes and yes to both of those. I think Oregon... If you look back at my preseason top 10, fellas, I know I get reminded often of who I didn't have in my preseason top 10 or who I really missed on, but I was pretty accurate on Oregon. I had them number three. What that meant was I felt Oregon would make the college football playoff, and they are poised to do exactly that if they can continue to win and do get a matchup with Washington and a rematch in the last Pac-12 title game to ever be played. As I've stated, I mentioned this earlier today with my friend Jake Crane on his show Crane and Company that's streamed on the Daily Wire. We can't unsee the Washington loss. Okay, the Washington loss happened, and that's why they can't get past Washington right now in the poll. Okay. But the same thing holds true for Alabama. We cannot unsee the Texas loss. The one difference, however, is Oregon has the potential of getting redemption. Unfortunately for Alabama, Texas isn't in the SEC yet. They can't play them and get that redemption. So that's a big difference when you look at it. So Oregon, in my opinion, among the one-loss teams, is the team best suited to get to the college football playoff. Not Alabama.
There's where all those tweets go.
We need to discuss that on the other side.
Yeah, we will do that.
Not a problem.
Tim Brando is our guest on Big Noon Sports. I'm thinking you're going to want to hang around for this.
Join Tide 100
is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as Roll Tide as Houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
And our guest from Fox Sports is Tim Brando. Tim was arguing the case for Oregon and the Ducks, and I think you can look at their schedule and see that they've had some really quality wins, but so has the University of Alabama. But as far as two teams that have one loss and, are have high hopes on the playoffs. You don't think Alabama is, you don't think they're there yet?
No, I don't. I think who they've beaten, they've beaten well, and they looked awfully good. They've improved, Matt. And I'm not arguing the case. I'm simply telling you what I think. The question was asked, what I think of Oregon, and I told you. I think they are the best one-loss team in America. And I think with all due respect, to the Alabama faithful, yes, your team has really improved. And Jalen Milroe is a heck of a story. I give a lot of credit to Tommy Reese for making the appropriate changes after the Texas game to better give him an opportunity to succeed, getting away from having him throw much in the pocket and roll him out, let him use his running skill. And I think he does throw the ball far better when he is on the move. So that's been a really good thing. Alabama, probably, if you want to measure them against Texas, okay, if you want to measure them against Texas, then we got a little bit of more of a debate. I think Oregon is clearly the better team. Bo Nix, just think about the numbers here, okay? We're talking about a guy that numbers are just off the charts. His completion percentage is 80%. He's thrown for over 3,000 yards, okay? 29 touchdowns, two interceptions. I'll repeat, 29 touchdowns, two interceptions.
Crazy.
Most experienced quarterback in NCAA history, 57 consecutive starts entering this week's play. He's got an NCAA record completion percentage that passes Alabama's Matt Jones, for crying out loud. All right, so you should be accustomed to knowing a little something about Matt. So he's got an incredible entourage of receivers. Troy Franklin, sprinter speed, okay, 10.34 40 speed. Tez Johnson, his brother from another mother, who is an outstanding talent himself, who's been his go-to guy out of Pinson, Alabama, having a hell of a year. Gary Bryant, another outstanding wide receiver, transfer from USC. And you add Jordan James and Bucky Irving, who've been really getting it done out of the backfield. I mean, they are a complete team, and that defense is pushing around people. Their defensive front with Casey Rogers, with Popo Amovai, they're getting a great rush up the middle. Jeffrey Bassa is an outstanding linebacker. They are good defensively. They've got a defensive coordinator in Tosh Lapoy that's worked for Kirby, that knows a little bit about what goes on at Bama, just like Dan Lanning did. So they've been well schooled by some of the best coaches at both Georgia and at Alabama. And of course, spent some time at the NFL level, Tosh Lapoy did. So they are a really sound football team in every respect. And they lost the game to Washington in large measure because Dan Lanning wanted to play the analytics, and he played it too often. He cost himself by chasing a touchdown when he could have just taken a field goal at the end of a half. And then with the ball on his own 35-yard line with a three-point lead, and the opposing team at home had a guy that's another Heisman candidate, Michael Penix, who I would put right with Bo Nix, sort of neck and neck as the leaders in the clubhouse for the award. They gave him a short field, and they took advantage and won the football game. So that's their only loss. And Alabama's was at home to Texas. If you don't think the College Football Playoff Committee doesn't weigh where the games were played and how those games were played out when determining who has the best loss of the one-loss teams, you're kidding yourself. And if Alabama fan didn't learn from last year, okay, regardless of what Nick Saban said afterwards, okay, the high and mighty Nick Saban can say, you know what, weren't we the fourth best team? Well, when you get right down to it, weren't we the fourth best team? He said that before. And you know what? The bottom line is, just because he says it doesn't mean it's going to get him any more consideration the next time around. Okay, the bottom line is, when you measure his one loss, Oregon's one loss, it's not up to speed. It's just not.
All right, let's shift gears to Michigan. I'll just throw out a couple of phrases. Jim Harbaugh, sign-stealing, three-game suspension. Tim, the mic is yours.
First and foremost, I believe that, you know the NCAA has an ongoing investigation that lasts 90 days. And the 90 days, they haven't even sent the letter of notification yet to Michigan. So that starts a 90-day clock. So the NCAA can't do anything and won't do anything until after this season is over. What really happened here, Lars, and I'm going to speak right to you on this one, because you know the people involved, the scribes that are involved here, and I have great respect for all of them. I do. And I certainly have in my past used anonymous sources. So they have every right to use anonymous sources whenever and however they like. gather up whatever information you want to gather up, all right? But in the final analysis, they convicted him in public through social media with their findings through anonymous sources that were, in fact, in my opinion, and no one shouted me down on this, anonymous sources coming directly from Indianapolis and the infractions committee and enforcement people within the confines of the NCAA. Okay? No one will be able to convince me otherwise of that. So they utilized that, plus a few other friends in media, particularly those that represent a company that does not have a contractual agreement with the Big Ten, and they were able to go forth and conquer and get the commissioner of the Big Ten in his rookie year to tower to some extent and make this move with a 13-page statement that had really one paragraph in it that really jumped out to me. This is not, Tony Petitti said in that prepared statement, a penalty being waged against Jim Harbaugh. This is against Michigan, the university. Well, that told me all I needed to know. All right. That told me all I needed to know, that they believed, based on the findings that they had heard about, not findings that they could corroborate, that they had to do something to rid themselves of this albatross that was hanging around the conference's neck. And for him, as the new commissioner, to get these ADs and coaches, all of whom were just all around him saying, you got to do something, you got to do something. So he did something, all right, with an understanding that he had to penalize them in some way, shape, fashion, or form, or he was going to have a real problem on his hands. Now, coming up this week on Friday, when Harbaugh gets his opportunity, I suggest that he'll get that stay. I think Jim Harbaugh, in all likelihood, will be on the sideline this weekend. I think an injunction will be granted. And then by the time they deal with that, the season will be over, and we're going to be in the postseason with college football's playoff, and Michigan will be in it. And just as was the case with Auburn back in 2010, when everybody in the SEC was screaming Cam, scam, scam, Cam. And I know it was different, but the eligibility situation with Cam Newton was a very big deal, and a lot of other coaches were breathing right down the neck of Mike Slive. Mike Slive handled that beautifully, exquisitely, made sure that the NCAA got their ineligibility for one day, for a 24-hour period, on a Friday before the practice before the Georgia game. Cam Newton showed up, and he was ready to go. I'll never forget, at CBS, we had Tony Barnhart right there covering the entire conversation. Commissioner Slive was on hand at Auburn, and this he just handled it, and it was over. And nothing else was said. A lot of gnashing of teeth around the rest of the league. I think the same thing's going to happen here. I think a lot of Big Ten coaches and athletic directors can scream bloody murder, but in the end, the NCAA decided to let the media and a lot of other influences do its dirty work for them, because they couldn't do anything and can't do anything because of the corrupt nature of how they go about the business of governance, and because they can never get anything solid. Okay, it takes them too long on any investigation. Ultimately, they felt it necessary to go after Harbaugh because they hate Harbaugh. And with the NCAA, it's always personal.
Get
the people they want to get. They get the people they want to get, Lars. They don't get the people they don't want to get. See Kansas, see the six-year FBI investigation in basketball as Exhibit A.
In your personal opinion, did Michigan cheat?
No. I don't think that Michigan did anything that any other program has ever done knowingly.
That's not the question, Jim. That's not the question. Did they cheat?
Okay.
There's video evidence that they were on the sideline.
Sure, but
just saying that every other team does it doesn't make it right.
I didn't say it was right. I said that to penalize them is inappropriate and not well-founded. We need to allow the NCAA to get the hell out of college football's business, and we need to self-govern. The bigger issue here, fellas, is how in the world are we allowing, a body like the NCAA, who has nothing, has done nothing but hurt college football since it lost its monopoly financially on college football in 1984, which most of the people on social media, many of the writers today, and almost every other broadcaster I know of, has conveniently caught amnesia over. We don't need the stinking NCAA in college football at all. And if the commissioners, along with Petitti and Sankey, take hold of this the way they should, within the next calendar, 24 months, the NCAA will be a thing of the past where football is concerned anyway. So I hope that answers your question. I believe Michigan will play for and win the national championship, whether Harbaugh is there or not. And if they don't, Oregon will.
Hard to disagree with that, Tim.
I think in the end run, Michigan and the Big Ten are getting what they want. They got a shot at a national championship,
even though
they're pointing fingers back and forth
$6 million, $6 million per team, too, in the Big Ten. Yeah. Tim, this is great stuff, man. Thank you so much.
Always, Tim. Thank you, man.
Well, you know I love you guys. All the best.
All right. You too.
Thank you, Timmy.
Lars, there are 8 athletes that are worth $1 billion or more. You want to take a shot at a couple of those when we get back?
You bet.
All right. You're listening to Big Noon Sports. Thank you, Timmy Brando from Fox Sports. Listen to him this weekend. We'll be right back.
Coming up on The Game with Ryan Fowler.
Coming up on the Tuesday edition of The Game, we'll feature Mike Dettillier. We'll do a Dreamland score prediction day. We're going to get you ready for the weekend as we move toward Chattanooga right here on The Game starting at 2 o'clock on Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC, your home for Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
The longest running sports program in Tuscaloosa. The Game with Ryan Fowler. Weekdays from 2 to 6 p.m. on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app. Tide 100.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A cloudy sky this afternoon. The most widespread rain stays south of here, the high 67. Cloudy and cooler tonight. Rain moving in, especially after midnight, the low 50. Tomorrow, cloudy and cool with occasional rain. The high in the upper 50s at 59. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 69 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
Really good edition of Big Noon Sports. Thank you, Lars. Thank you, Noah. Thank you, Tim Brando, and to Mike Rodak as well. Just one of those things, you know, Lars, you do it as well. You're just kind of thumbing through things or scrolling through things in the morning and looking for little topics that might be worthwhile. And I found this one very interesting as far as the richest athletes or richest people in sports. I found it very interesting. I don't think I'm going to surprise you with the leadoff here, am I?
No.
And this is it's Michael Jordan.
So you said athletes who are billionaires.
Yes. And then there's one that's almost above all of them that isn't an athlete. He's just involved in the sport. But you just want to take a couple of shots at one of the other 7 remaining.
I would think Tiger Woods.
He is number 2. Very good.
I would think LeBron.
He is one, two. He's fifth.
Because of his business ventures with movie theaters and what he has done with the development in Los Angeles, especially in areas, neighborhoods of need, I would say Magic Johnson.
Very good. And you just mentioned, I think, what the coolest thing about his amassing a billion plus is certainly he was well paid by the Lakers. Nobody's going to doubt that. But he made, what, 10 times what he made with the Lakers? He took what he was paid with the Lakers and made himself a billionaire. He's just a brilliant businessman. So that's very, very good. You have gotten four of the top five.
Then there'd have to be a soccer player. There has to be a soccer player. So I would say Messi.
That's what I would guess.
Messi is actually six. Ronaldo is third. So there you were, nailing the soccer.
Then,
believe it or not, you want me to give you sports?
Yeah.
Tennis and boxing.
Tennis would be... Well, women still don't make as much as men. I was going to say Serena, so it's got to be Federer.
It is.
Boxing, I would like to say Tyson, but probably blew his money.
I think he pilfered a lot of that. I still think he has some now.
Mayweather?
There you go. Lars, I would give you an A plus on your assignment for that. That's pretty good. But here's one guy that is would be second if you included people in sports. And Vince McMahon is worth $2 billion.
Wow.
$2 billion for wrestling. I thought that was pretty interesting.
You know, I went to one event. I went to one WWF back then, back in like 1989 in Omaha, Nebraska, and Hulk Hogan was the guy. And I got to say, it was so much fun. I had a good time.
Man, it's entertaining stuff. I mean, they put it out there. You remember Vince McMahon was the integral part of, you remember the XFL? Birmingham had the Thunderbolts, who had moved here by then, but Jay Barker was the quarterback.
That's right.
And, when they first made the announcement that Birmingham was kind of going to be a key cog in the wheel here, Vince McMahon came, and they had the – really, it wasn't a news conference as much as it was just a big party. Vince McMahon was at the club. I'm assuming you've been to the club.
I'm going to the club on Thursday, actually. Yeah.
Oh, well, you'll find that it is a spectacular venue for anything from a wedding to an XFL announcement.
It's got
to
be the most pretentious name of any place in America. It's not the club. It's the club.
The club. Well, and you have to be the somebody to be at the club. But it is a very,
it is an amazing view.
Very nice, and it's an amazing view, and it's run very well, and there's a reason why it's called The Club. I will share with you quickly. When I was young, they had not many had been built, and Huntsville, in its superb creativity, there was a mall built, and it was like one of the first in the South. You know what they called it?
What's that?
The Mall.
Love it.
Anyway, it was extravagant. Vince McMahon walked onto the podium where they had all the people seated, like a board of directors, and the lights were flashing, and it was just a big show at the club with Birmingham's city outline in the background. Pretty fabulous stuff.
Well, right. Noah, thank you so much. The phone lines here at Tide 100.9 already lit up for Ryan Fowler, Dawson, Robert, Paul. Man, they're just, they can't wait to get in.
Well, he's the man.
All right. Come Ryan on, Fowler is on funny. Next here. Tide 100.9. Matt, we'll hang out tomorrow.
Rich Rod, you going to work on Rich Rod?
Rich Rod.
Yep. Back in 22.